Welcome to the Upward Running Podcast, where faith fuels your fitness journey.
Welcome back to the Upward Running Podcast. This is your one stop each week to be motivated and inspired to get off the couch and onto the running trail, where you can in turn inspire others to do the same. Let's learn, laugh, and leap into running together, giving God the glory for what we are able to do in His name. Amen. Well, I am your running host, Dean Thompson, coming to you once again from the Upward Sports Studio. Well, do you think running can cure depression? Well, it can, at least sometimes. And we'll share a story where that actually happened. And then I'm going to talk about being all in. What does it mean, and what are the implications for our running and our faith? And joining me for that and much more is Upward Running Director Mitchell Hollis.
Hey, before we even start, I need to give a shout out. It's my lovely wife's birthday today.
So happy birthday, Holly.
Happy birthday, Holly.
Yeah.
How's your week been, Dean?
Oh, I got to tell you a story.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So I'm doing this. I've got a project going on in my yard.
Which where you always have projects.
I always have some kind of project going on. Yeah. And it involves these blocks, you know.
Like concrete blocks?
Well, rocks. Kind of, you know, those prefab things, you know, where you stack them and make borders and things like that. So I've got about a half a pallet of these things in the back of my truck. Mm. Well, the reason why I have them in my truck to start with is because I didn't want to take them out and stack them somewhere and then have to move them again. So I thought, I'll just leave them back there. I'll back my truck up to where I need them, and I'll take them right off and put them right in place. So that was my first mistake. And I'm taking these. We went to a ball game, and on the way back from the ball game, I had to put my brakes on a little quick. Mm. And when I did, that pallet slid forward in the back of my truck. Didn't do any, it wasn't a problem. They just slid forward. Well, you know, that makes it harder to unload. So I thought, when I came home, what I'll do is when I get to that hill near my house, I'll get on that hill, I'll stop, and then I'll start again, and it'll slide that pallet back toward the tailgate. I literally ripped the tailgate out of its hinges.
Wow.
So, just because I'm too lazy, because I'm lazy. I'm just worried about how much work is it going to be for me to unload.
Well, you were trying to be more efficient.
I was.
Let's put it that way. Frame it that way.
Yes, but anyway, when you're dumb, you got to be tough. Yeah. So, anyway, so now I've got my tailgate won't open. And
really?
I literally, I had to put it back together. I mean, it tore one side completely out.
I've never done anything like that.
No, thing, I'm sure so. You haven't.
Man, what about the weather out here right now?
Oh, it's
cool.
I know
we talk about the weather a lot, but it feels incredible.
Yes, it is nice and good. And guess what? So Saturday morning is our 5K challenge graduation race for my group.
Yeah.
Perfect day.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to be like this.
Oh, yeah. Saturday this weekend's morning. Supposed to be really nice.
Yeah, so we hit it.
The heat and humidity will be here before we know it, though.
Yes, it will. Well, our post of the week this week comes from Kimberly Ann Hill Slape. What a fantastic weekend it has been. So good for my soul, and honored to get to help my friend Sheila Cliff Finney in some small ways with her race event to help raise money for Camp Cocoon for grieving children ages 6 to 16 who have lost a loved one. FYI, if you know any kiddos that would benefit from this camp, or you'd like to volunteer, go to pruittcares.org for more info. This is the second year Sheila has put this race on in honor of her daughter Kayla, who passed away, and it is an amazing day to run or walk and remember those who are gone too soon. So go ahead and mark off Saturday, March 28th, 2026 on your calendar to participate in this race. It was a tremendous blessing to spend the weekend with some of the best people I know, friends and family. We laughed, we cried, we loved, and I know God showed up. And I'm so proud of my hubby, Randy Slape, who snagged a second place award in his age group, as well as all the other award winners and participants. And now for my photo dump from Friday and Saturday.
I love seeing these race reports. You know, Kimberly just did, we just did a feature on her on the Facebook page.
Yeah.
She just did a 75-mile relay as well. So Kimberly's been putting in the miles for sure.
She has. She has. There are so many good causes out there for that's one of the great things about our sport.
Yeah.
Is I can't name another sport or even any kind of an event that right. does as much for the community as running does, because most runs benefit some sure. organization.
Yeah.
And it's cool to be a part of all of that. And this one's an interesting one. I've never heard of a organization that supports what this one does.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really cool. It's really yeah. cool. Can you think of another? I mean, golf, you have golf tournaments, but you don't have nearly as many of those. You have, you know, sometimes concerts are done for that reason.
I've said I was the chairman of a RPAC back in my early building days. That's the Realtor Political Action Committee. And I've said that runs nowadays are the golf tournaments of 20 years ago. It yeah. seemed like 20 years ago, 25 years ago, there was a golf tournament every week yeah. somewhere in our community.
It's true.
Yeah. But now it's because you can touch a lot more of the community with a run, walk, you know, fun run, whatever. Sure. And so, yeah, when I was chairman that year, I actually kind of a fun fact, because you wouldn't look at me and think, oh, he's a theater guy. You just wouldn't do that. But that year, we had been doing a golf tournament, and I was in charge of coming up with the fundraiser for that year. And I said, we're not going to do a golf tournament. I said, we do those every year. You go to the same people asking for money. And I had just went and watched Smoke on the Mountain. Have you ever seen Smoke on the Mountain?
I have not, but
I've
heard.
It's a yep. play that's really good. It's kind of old Appalachian gospel setting. And so we partnered with the Dalton Little Theater here in town. We were going to promote it. They were going to put the play on, and we would split the proceeds. We sold the Wink Theater out two nights in a row
wow.
with that play, and made way more money for the RPAC than we would have ever made with a golf tournament.
Yeah.
And did you know I had a theatrical background, Dean?
No, you don't.
I didn't actually act.
Yeah.
I watched one.
That's good stuff. I've done that before.
Yeah.
Our run of the week comes from Curtis Rowe. Curtis Rowe is not a run club member, but I love this post. He says this, same race, 3 years apart, miles for Messiah 5K. 2022, age 40, body weight 225, finish time 23:43. 2025, age 43, body weight 185, finish time 17:46. He says, always make time for your health. That job, those kids, your schooling, your garbage diet, or whatever else you have going on is not worth sacrificing your health for. I feel like a new person compared to 3 years ago. And I'll post these if you're watching this. I'll post these so you can see the pictures of Curtis. This guy, Curtis, ran with us in the relay, the Ville-to-Ville relay. He was probably our MVP, MVR, most valuable runner
mm-hmm.
For that. And just does a great job, and such a nice guy.
Sounds like Curtis needs to be a run club member, though.
He does need to be a run club member.
We need to get him into run club.
We do.
But one thing I will say about this post, at first, my knee-jerk reaction was I focused on his time. Like, wow, that's
– yeah.
Especially at that age, to start the sport, you find very few people that start that late in life and get that fast.
Yeah.
But I think the thing that really hit me, because it hit me wrong at first, he said, those kids are not worth sacrificing your health for. And when I first read it, I'm going to be honest, I was like, ooh, that didn't sound right. But if you really think about it, he's prioritizing his health so that he can be around long term for those kids.
That's right.
It's kind of like putting your oxygen mask on first before yeah. you help others, because if you're 100 pounds overweight and diabetic, you're not going to be around for your kids. So I just thought I'd point that out.
Yeah,
some people may hear that and think the same thing I did, like, ooh, that's, but when you get on an airplane, what do they tell you to do with your oxygen mask?
Put it on.
Put yours on first.
That's right.
And so that you can help others. And I think that's what he was getting at here.
Yeah.
So,
that, well, that's
great job, Curtis. I mean, this is, now, was he was on your relay team?
Yes.
Okay, yep. Cool.
He's the guy, I think, is he the one I handed off to, or he's the one I, maybe not. Anyway, he ran, I think he was the only one that ran more miles than me on the relay. And yeah, he ran tougher legs than I did. So,
well, Curtis, if you're listening, we need you in Run Club.
Yes. Amen. Amen. So, you know, we've seen a lot of people lose weight over the years, but I don't know if I've ever seen anybody run as fast.
Yeah.
Especially, I mean, he's still at 185. For you and I, 185 would be pretty heavy
to be trying
to run. For him, of course, probably, I guess it feels light.
I mean, he's lost a kid off his back.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
Imagine if he drops another 20 where he's going to be.
Yeah, well, yeah, yeah. Well, and some people carry it a lot better than, obviously, carry it better than others. But anyway, if you're struggling with your weight, just remember and be inspired by Curtis and his story. It's a pretty, pretty neat story.
Yeah.
Our trivia question from last week, what is the chemical energy compound that makes our muscles work? And then I said, hint, it's abbreviated as three letters. And of course, the answer is ATP, adenosine triphosphate. And so I thought I'll ask our friends at Perplexity about it. And this is what it says. Adenosine triphosphate is often called the energy currency of the cell. It is a small molecule found in all living cells, and its main job is to capture and transfer chemical energy derived from the breakdown of food molecules to power nearly every cellular process that requires energy. Without ATP, cells would not have the energy to function, and life would not be possible. So this is how it works. ATP is composed, it's got three, there's three phosphate groups that are attached to what they call a ribose sugar and an adenine base. What happens is these things break up. Mm-hmm. And when they break up, it releases this ATP that causes the action. Actually, it changes from ATP to ADP, adenosine diphosphate, when it breaks off. And it creates this energy that lets our body work in all different ways. And the ways that it works is muscle contraction, obviously, nerve impulse transmission, active transport of molecules across cell membranes, synthesis of DNA and RNA and proteins, and then, of course, cell signaling and communication. So all of this stuff has to have ATP to happen. So you have to do that. And so how is it made? It's made through a few different ways, something called cellular respiration. Most ATP is produced in the mitochondria of cells. We've talked about the mitochondria, right? Through a process called cellular respiration, which uses glucose from our food and oxygen to generate ATP, water, and carbon dioxide. Cellular respiration has three main stages. The first is glycolysis. That's where glucose is breaking down into pyruvate, producing a small amount of ATP in electron carriers. And then there's the Krebs cycle, which is another way that it happens, or the electron transport chain. And what happens is glycolysis is quick, Krebs cycle is a little bit slower, electron transport chains even a little bit slower than that, but it can create more. So the shorter the cycle, the more energy it takes to create it. And it's sort of like when you're sprinting, you're using more glycolysis. Mm-hmm. When you're doing longer distance stuff, you're doing more electron transport chain. So all of these things are things that happen through with ATP. And it says, cells do not store large amounts of ATP. Instead, they constantly recycle ADP back into ATP using the energy from food. That's why our food is so important. Mm-hmm. This rapid turnover ensures that cells have a steady supply of energy to meet their needs. And the conclusion for all this, ATP is essential for life, acting as the immediate source of energy for nearly all cellular activities. It is produced mainly in the mitochondria through cellular respiration and is constantly recycled to keep up with the body's energy demands.
So let me see if I can summarize this into English. And you tell me if I'm wrong or right, because this is the first time I've ever read this morning, but I have these illustrations in my head. So the mitochondria are like the little gas tanks. You know, the more mitochondria you have the little gas tanks, and running long and slow and in your zones builds more mitochondria. ATP is the fuel that's in the gas cans. And what you eat determines whether it's high test or low test or jet fuel.
That's a good way to put it.
And so it all works together, but without one of them, you got to have, it's a three-legged stool, right?
That's right.
Without one of them, you're dead in the water, or you're not hitting the goals you want to hit.
And the only thing I would add is that the training that you do, the running that you do and all, that kind of, it's like putting an additive into that gas tank,
right,
that makes that fuel a little more powerful.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's a good point. You know, all I can say about this is people who do not believe that there is a God out there and believes that all of this was created, this is just one process in our body.
Yeah.
There are dozens of these really intricate, crazy, happening, yeah, but different types of processes that happen. And that didn't just happen by accident.
No.
God created this. And oh my goodness, anybody out there who doesn't see that, I don't know what you're looking at.
Yeah.
Pay attention.
Upward Sports equips churches to run self-sustaining sports ministries in their communities. Whether you're a sports fanatic or on staff at a church, Upward Sports will give you all the tools you need to run a first-class sports ministry that allows you to reach families in your community. Upward Sports offers basketball, soccer, flag football, cheerleading, volleyball, baseball, and softball through league and camp offerings. At Upward Sports, we want to help your church make a difference and give you increased opportunities to share the gospel. Learn more today at upward.org. That's upward.org.
All right, we're back. Listen, if you haven't submitted your story and you've thought about it, it's time to do that. We need more stories. The story we're going to share today is actually one that we've had for a little while. So,
but we've never shared it. How is that?
I don't know, but it's in the book.
Yeah, yeah.
It's in one of the devotions books. But yeah, we've never shared it. So anyway, so submit your story. Go to upwardrunning.com and submit your story. So what do you think about the royals, you know, like the royal family? Do you pay any attention to it?
You know, no.
I don't either.
I don't either.
We
actually started watching that Netflix series.
The Crown?
The Crown.
Yeah.
And we lasted about three episodes. It's just...
Debbie thought that was one of the greatest series.
Oh, well, that's the thing, is you either love it and you're all in, or you're like me and it's like, and you're completely out. So I fall into the camp of it just doesn't interest me. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of fascinating, the history and the pageantry, but that's about it. It's just interesting.
That's the way I've always been. My mother was big into the royal family, and it's one of the things I didn't pick up from her until now. So listen, this is why I even bring it up. Princess Charlotte, which is Prince William's daughter, she runs track.
Now we're interested.
Yes. So she runs the 400 and the hurdles. And the way we found this out was Keely Hodgkinson, which is the Olympic 800 meter champion, was there to receive an award from the royal family. And she got a chance to talk to her and found out that Princess Charlotte is a runner. Princess Charlotte has also tried rugby, soccer, and gymnastics. Now, I can't imagine. Can you imagine being on the other side of the ball playing rugby against the princess? The idea of hitting the princess just...
I don't guess I knew. Maybe this is my ignorance. I did not know that there are female rugby teams.
I didn't either.
That's what struck me. But I mean, squaring up to take out the princess. I'm sure there's Secret Service or whatever they call Secret Service all around the field. It's
but it is pretty cool that the princess seems to do normal kid stuff. Yeah.
Is she fast? You went looking up times. And
I did. Okay. I did not. But I just thought it was fun that she does that. Well, it turns out that we have this older story about Jerry Snyder. Jerry Snyder.
I cannot believe. I had to go back and look. I thought, Dean's wrong. We've actually done this one on the podcast. And I went searching for it, and sure enough, because this is one of my favorite Jerry stories.
Yeah. I've got an entire, you know, I keep every podcast, the titles and the description of every, mm-hmm. I keep on one document. Mm-hmm. So I went through and searched that document to make sure. I wanted to make sure. So we haven't shared this one. So it's good. And you know, Jerry, if you listen to this podcast any length of time, you know that he is known for his sense of humor.
But this one's different.
This one's different. Mm-hmm. But it kind of gives you an idea on where his sense of humor came from, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So again, from Jerry Snyder, this one's called Running with Abe. Attached to one of my running shoes is a tiny pouch. Inside the pouch is my ID, a love note from my wife, and a shiny penny dated 2011 to celebrate the year I turned 60. Engraved on that penny is the likeness of Abraham Lincoln, 16th President of the United States. Just above the picture of Abe are the words, "In God We Trust." A doctor treating me for depression suggested I start running. Following his advice, I got a good pair of shoes and hit the road. The prescription worked. Now, over 25 years later, I'm still running, sometimes not as far and sometimes not as fast, but I'm still running. For my efforts, I earned a stack of medals, a pile of t-shirts, and some bragging rights. I met some great people, and most importantly, as the miles added up, my faith grew as well. At one of my first races, I saw a runner wearing a shirt with a picture of an eagle and the words of Isaiah 40:31, "But they that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings as eagles. They shall run and not be weary, and they shall walk and not faint." When I ran a marathon, I decided to wear a shirt with that same verse. Then I came up with an idea to make my adventure even more fun. I started asking family and friends to sign my race shirt. With a laundry marker that promised what was written would not get washed away by my sweat, people were more than happy to sign their names, add their favorite Bible verses, and affirmations. Right foot, left foot, a whole bunch of times. With determination comes success. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. That's Philippians 4:13. Quote, run like you stole something. Another quote, winners get up, losers give up. Or be in the light. I can plus I will equals I did. See you at the finish line. One friend drew a picture of some feet and beside it wrote, the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat. D-E-F-E-E-T. Another friend who signed my shirt had been a prisoner of war in Vietnam. Another whose name appeared on the shirt had spent her life in a wheelchair. People with alcohol and drug problems, victims of abuse, and parents of delinquent teenagers, their names were on my shirt. As I ran my marathon, I prayed for the folks on my shirt and the marathons in their life. At mile 22, my legs were aching and several little voices in my head were competing for my attention. One of those voices wanted me to quit. Another said, keep going. And yet another said I was crazy to be doing this in the first place. Then I heard another voice that didn't belong to me. I looked at the man running beside me. He smiled and said, can you believe we're paying to do this? We both laughed. And from there to the finish, the only voice I heard was the one telling me to keep going. Proverbs 17:22 reminds us that a merry heart doeth good like medicine. Remember that Lincoln penny attached to my shoe? Honest Abe said, in the end, it's not the years in your life that count. It's the life in your years. And Jesus said, I have come to give you life and give it more abundantly. That's from John 10:10.
Jerry knocks it out of the park again.
Yeah.
You know, the thing that just jumped out at me is, this is just another example of you just don't know what's going on with people. I would have never in a billion years thought Jerry had been treated for depression.
No.
I mean, we can't assume anything about people.
No, you can't.
And what he did, taking that little piece of advice, because how many times have we said, you know, depression drugs are just through the roof nowadays. And for a lot of people, all they need to do is go out for a run.
Yeah.
Or a walk or a ruck or a bike ride or get the sunlight coming into your eyes.
Yeah.
That cures a whole lot. Now, I'm not discounting drugs. I'm not. But, man, we just, for so much of our society, it's inside looking at these computer screens, and we never go out and just experience God's creation.
Yeah, I agree. And we've seen this happen a lot
with alcoholics. Mm-hmm. I've seen, I don't know why, but running seems to be a really good replacement for mm-hmm. that. It's a good replacement. I think that, you know, running just has this thing that stimulates.
What's the dopamine?
Physically here? And mentally. Yeah, it's, I don't know. I wonder what would happen if we took people who were depressed and we gave them this prescription. What would that look like? How would that change our society?
Well, and we're going to get into this a little bit more later after this story, but I mean, that's, I hate to always keep referring to podcasts, but so many of these people that we're hearing nowadays that are rising up that we've talked about are saying the same thing. And one of them is this, that, you know, people who have an addiction, it's a dopamine deficiency.
Yeah.
Is really what it is.
Yeah.
It's not that they're an alcoholic. It's a person looking for that dopamine fix, and alcohol does that. It's why when they quit drinking alcohol and they go to running, they become ultra marathoners. Because it's not that they're dopamine junkies. It's they actually have a deficiency of dopamine that they're trying to feel in other areas. And where was I going with that? Yeah, I mean, the absence of dopamine is the presence of addiction. That's the way this guy put it on this podcast. Yeah. And that so many times we try to run to a appeal when all we need to do is feel that, because it's pretty easy to feel a dopamine hit. I mean, you can do it destructively or you can do it constructively. And getting out, getting a walk in or a run in, many times we'll feel that need inside. Now, do you need supplements, things like that? Probably, absolutely. But a pill is not always the answer, is what I'm trying to get at.
There are probably, I don't know, would you say probably 50, at least 50% of the time, we don't need a lot of these things, these drugs that
you and I are both teetering on talking outside of our knowledge base, but just like we're going to talk about later, some of these things I've put in place in my own life, just simple things, really simple things. And if you're dealing with depression out there, give running or walking or rucking, give some outdoor endurance sport a try.
Yeah.
Before going, it doesn't hurt to try it.
Yeah.
And I think just like Jerry, you may be in for something that's extremely positive in your life, like it did, Jerry loves running now.
Yeah.
And it also fixed a problem that he had.
Yeah. You know what I've noticed is that we know running is good for us from a mental standpoint as well as a physical standpoint. And these people, I've never thought about this until I read this story and started thinking about it. I don't know anybody who is a avid, regular runner who is one of those people who is negative about everything. You know, we know those people who, it doesn't matter what you're talking about, they're going to bring up something negative. Mm-hmm. And there are those people out there like that. I don't know anybody who is all the time negative and a runner. Do you? I had never thought about that before, but it's almost like Superman. It's, you can't have both. You can't have Clark Kent and Superman in the same room. You can't have a runner and a super negative person in the same room.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
I don't know. It's an observation. Maybe I'm wrong. Isaiah 40:31 says, but those who wait on the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. Seems like we've had this verse a lot recently. I've been really closely monitoring my sleep over the past couple of months, and I'm even reading a book about sleep. So I'm really, really tuned into this. And the great thing about a good night's sleep is that it makes you feel fresh the next day. It renews you, which is what Isaiah is talking about in here. It's talking about renewing our strength. So when you have a poor night's sleep, it doesn't you feel terrible the next day. That last week, Debbie and I don't remember what it was, but we've been both paying attention to our sleep scores every day. And so one day I get up and I had a sleep score of like 52. And I told Debbie, I just looked at her and I'm like, I had this feeling inside of me. I was like, I'm going to be really irritable today. I can feel it. It's just building inside of me. And you know that it's there, but you can't do anything about it. And that's what God is talking about is if we'll get plugged in to what he wants us to do, that strength, that good feeling is going to be renewed in us daily.
Yeah, it's these wearables are kind of, it's a love-hate because I know you use a Garmin, not because I see a Garmin on your arm, but because you use the word irritable. Because if the Garmin, when you look at your sleep score, it says you may be irritable today. And whether you know it or not, that's the you use the exact phrase that your watch tells you. Because I've seen it and I'm like, it's almost like a self-fulfilling prophecy. I'm like, oh, I'm going to have a bad day today. And Holly's like, seriously? You're letting your watch? So it's good and bad, but I think overall it's a good exercise that you and I are both doing is really starting to look at, and it's why I don't like that statement, because you know I've always said I love data. I don't like for data to be prescriptive. I like to look at data to evaluate what I've already done.
Right.
I don't like data to drive what I'm doing. But when I say I don't, I mean, we've learned, like with what you're talking about with sleep, I've learned if I don't eat or drink after 7 p.m., my sleep score will be 20 points higher.
Yeah.
Period. So if you're out there and you want to, if you're struggling with sleep, number one, get some. You don't have to have a fancy Garmin. There's a lot of things that track your sleep nowadays, and they're getting cheaper and cheaper. Try not eating or drinking after 7 o'clock. For me, it makes a big difference. For others, it may not. Some people can drink coffee at 11 o'clock and go to sleep. So, but I've learned the, if I do this, it's going to do that. And I think for that reason, these wearables and track this data that we're surrounded with now, that's a good part of the data being out there.
Yeah, for sure. Well, stay tuned, because my plan is, this book that I'm reading about sleep, my plan is to put all of the notes together and do a separate podcast just about sleep, just kind of a bonus podcast. So we'll see if
it would be cool to do, because you're kind of on a different journey. I'm on a different journey. Maybe we ought to just talk about the things, because we'll get into a little bit at the end of this podcast, but we have some strong opinions on some things now that we may not have had 2 years ago.
That's true.
And, you know, we are experts on our opinions.
Yeah, that's right. We're experts on our opinions. I'm an expert.
You get what you pay for with this podcast, for sure. Right.
Philippians 4:13, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. I found this version of this verse. I love this version. I don't know why I found it or how I found it, but it says, at last you are, this starts back in verse 10. At last you are concerned about me again. That makes me very happy. We belong to the Lord, and I know that you are concerned, but you had no chance to show it. I'm not saying this because I need anything. I have learned to be content no matter what happens to me. I know what it's like to have what I need. I also know what it's like to have more than I need. I have learned the secret of being content no matter what happens. I am content whether I am well fed or hungry. I'm content whether I have more than enough or not enough. I can do all this by the power of Christ. He gives me strength.
It's all about being content where we are. First of all, that kind of sounds like the Message translation, which I do like to read the Message every now and then, because this right here, you could almost hear Paul saying this way.
It's called New International Reader's Version.
But it's funny that this, Jerry put this verse right after Isaiah 40:31, because I mean, think about it. But those who wait on the Lord shall renew their strength. Well, what does waiting take? I mean, what waiting takes, you being content.
Yeah.
Wait, if you're not content and you're waiting, you're going to be a mess.
Yeah.
But those who wait on the Lord, so I don't know. It seems like these two verses just naturally go together, even though they're completely different parts of the Bible written in completely different generations. It's like Jerry just put them together perfectly, because you can't have one without the other.
Yeah.
It's going to be tough to wait on the Lord if you're not content with where you're at.
It's a good point. What this verse tells me is there's no reason to alter the way we think based on our circumstances. So no matter whether things are going well or they're going poorly, our thoughts should be basically the same. Now, what your concerns are might be different, but as far as the positive, negative, we should be even no matter what our circumstances are. And if we can do that, if we can get to that point, we'll be plugged into God. Because,
yeah, I mean, gosh, when you said it that way, people started popping into my head, because some of the people that I look up to the most, that's what they are. They're like a cruise ship in the water.
Yeah.
I'm like a life raft in the water so many times. But I look up to them because they've mastered this. That it doesn't matter what you say to their facial expressions, a lot of times don't even change. Mm-hmm. It's like they're a rock. And that is spiritual maturity with the people that I'm thinking about. And these are older guys in my life that they're so spiritually mature that, I mean, they could have somebody come up and just dog cuss them, and their demeanor is not going to change. Yeah. You and me, we'd be flying off the handle and telling them what we thought. And I think we're getting there. You and I are both better than we were 20 years ago, for
Absolutely.
Sure. But we've still got a ways to go.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good point. John 10:10, the thief does not come except to steal and to kill and to destroy. I have come that they may have life and that they may have it more abundantly. I went and looked up, what's the definition of abundant? It is this: existing or occurring in large quantities, plentiful, more than enough, overflowing or ample, richly supplied or well provided. That's the picture of one heck of a great life, isn't it? And this is, who's Jesus talking to here? He's talking to the religious leaders of the day. And so it's so important that we get that we understand that being religious is not the answer. The answer is, are we plugged into what God wants us to do? And do we have that personal relationship with Him? Because if we don't, then we're going to be on the other end of this thing.
Sure.
And we don't want to be there. You know, over the years, I've heard many times, mostly in indirect language, that following a Christian lifestyle is restrictive. You hear people all the time, the non-Christians, that say, well, I don't want to be a Christian because you guys just have to, you know, you can't have any fun, or there's all these restrictive things that, but the truth is that it's the restrictions that we do have to restrict. It's true to some degree, but let me give you an example of why we're just talking about flying off the handle. Anger has been an issue in my life. Mm-hmm. Well, what I have learned over time is that anger is a sin. Let me say that.
Sure.
Anger is a sin. And when I fly off the handle in anger, there are almost always bad repercussions for that.
Yeah.
Almost every time. And so that being the case, then, okay, in Christianity, I am not allowed to, by the rules, to fly off the handle and be angry. Mm-hmm. That's a good thing. Because when I'm not angry, when I am restricted from doing that thing, then there is a positive outcome, meaning I don't have the negative outcome.
Right.
And that's kind of where God, in all of these rules that people talk about, it's to help us live this more abundant life.
Yeah. I mean, you've either got rules or you've got consequences.
Yeah.
Which is better. Mm-hmm. Rules are always better. People say this about, you know, everybody on here knows I'm a Dave Ramsey guy. People say this about a budget. That's too restrictive. Well, okay, so deal with consequences. Bankruptcy.
Yeah.
Pick your poison there. You know, And I always say one thing that if you listen to the Dave Ramsey show that Rachel Cruze actually says a lot, she said a budget actually gives you freedom.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, it's the opposite of what many people say, because I mean, let's say I want to buy a new bow and arrow this fall. I'm going to put in the budget in September. I'm going to buy a new bow. And so between now and then, I'm going to save and I'm going to make sure there's money in my budget in September to buy that bow. Well, when I load up in my truck in September to go to Cabela's to buy that new bow, guess what I have? I have the freedom
mm-hmm.
to do that and to feel good about it. Same thing with a training plan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people say, "Oh, it's a training plan. That's too restrictive." Well, okay. One, deal with the consequences. But a training plan, a budget, doing any of these things allows us to sit down and be thoughtful about whatever it is we're doing. And yes, it is restrictive, but restrictions are good so many times. And when you submit yourself to a plan or a set of rules or the Christian life, it's actually more freeing than had you not. It's the opposite of what many people say, because I've heard people say it.
Yeah.
I don't do a budget. I'm not on a training plan. I'm not doing that Christian life stuff. I want to be free to do what I want. Well, we're all free to do what we want to do.
Yeah.
But we're either going to put guardrails up in our lives or we're going to deal with the consequences of what's coming. It's either or.
Well
said. You're not getting away from either one of them.
Yep. Yep. Well said. Question, how can you make your run with God more fun? I think there's a lot of ways. You know, running with others and sharing with them is always fun. Praying while you run is a good way to do it. But, you know, I think my favorite thing is just to look around at God's creation and marvel at His creation. It just gives you that excuse. I mean, if you're a hunter, mm-hmm. you get to go out and you see it from that perspective. But running, you can see the same thing. You go out and you run outside and you see God's creation. You hear the birds while you're mm-hmm. running. You can feel God when you're out there running. And for me, that's the way that I make my running with God more fun, is to come to that realization.
I mean, I think for me, it's going into it with a thankfulness and a gratefulness for the opportunity. When you go through this life, understanding that we don't deserve anything and that we are entitled to nothing, it changes your spirit. It makes you a better person inside and out. And when you become thankful for the grind, which we've talked about this. We get this in fitness. If we could create a pill that we get this for our daily lives, if you become thankful for the grind, for the trials, for the valleys, for the hardships, you'll become stronger, better, and in the case of sport, faster. But to me, that makes my run, or right now ruck, walk with God, that makes it much more enjoyable when I take that posture, as opposed to, it's kind of the just juxtaposition that we just talked about. It's either you're going to deal with rules or you're going to deal with consequences. You can either go into a workout or to life with a sour look on your face like you hate it, or you can embrace it and enjoy the grind. I mean, it's and all it is right here. It's the 6 inches between your ears.
Yep.
How are you looking at it?
That's right. And you do have the choice. A lot of people will say, you know, you don't understand my life. Yeah, actually, I may not understand your circumstances,
but I understand life.
That's right. Yep. In what ways has the discipline of running helped you grow as a Christian? I think for me, what running does for me that helps me grow as a Christian is to understand the good day, bad day dynamic. Mm. When you run, when you are a runner, you have good days where things just seem to flow and things go great. And then you have those days where it just feels like you're having teeth pulled to go out and run, and you have both. And sometimes you don't know when which one is coming. And for me, when we talk about what you were just talking about and taking life as it comes and then responding to it in a positive way, whether it's good or bad, I think that helps me from a running standpoint. I have good days and I have bad days, and I know either one could be coming today, and I don't know which, and we'll just go through the day and figure it out. And I think from a Christian standpoint, that helps me handle negative things, because I look at it like I look at running. Today's a bad day running, but tomorrow may be great.
Yeah. I mean, I think for me, it shows me the cause and effect. You know, if I do this, this is going to happen. If I don't do this, then this is going to happen. And, you know, if I run, walk, or ruck today, I feel better, I look better, and I act better. When I don't, it's the opposite. When I get up in the morning and I go to Scripture and I read and I pray and I spend time with God, I feel better. I go through my day better. I have more joy that actually comes out of my face. Because, you know, sometimes we can say we have joy, but it looks like you're Eeyore walking around. And I think running or endurance sports in general, it illustrates those principles. It's why this sport that we love is such a great parallel to our walk with Christ. Because if we do these things, our run, walk, ruck will be better. And if we do these things, our relationship with Christ is going to be better. And in so many cases, those are the same things.
Yeah.
It's discipline. It's endurance. It's tenacity. It's doing hard things. Because Jesus said, pick up your cross daily and follow me. That's not a picture of sitting on the recliner eating Oreos.
Yeah.
It's not. That is a picture of doing a Yasso 800 on the track.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, if you want to draw those parallels.
Yeah.
But so many times we like to, I can do it the easy way. No.
No.
Anything worth having in this life is hard to get.
That's right. If you had a chance to write something on my running shirt, what would it be? That's easy for me. I would write, may God bless every step of every run. Go out there and shine your light.
Man, you gave the church answer, Dean. As soon as I read that question, I thought back 15 years and I would write, go hard.
Oh.
You know, because everybody used to make fun of me because when Lane was like six, you know, I would always say, go hard.
Yeah.
Go hard. So.
Good stuff.
But, or I would write, run for God, or I would write, upward running, which we have a lot of those.
Yeah, yeah. Of course, knowing it's Jerry, I would also probably add something like, you're making the world a brighter place.
Yeah.
Upward running is the best way to stay motivated for your fitness and faith journeys. You get these weekly podcasts, but there's so much more. We have proven training plans available for you, whether you're just at the beginning of your fitness quest or you've been running for 20 years. We have something for everyone, and it doesn't matter where you are with God either. We have something for you there too. If you're not a member, join today at upwardrunning.com. It is the best value you'll find to fuel both your faith and your fitness.
All right, we're back, and I've got this from WebMD. It says, will ultra-processed foods kill you? 5 findings from a new study.
We're diving off in a black hole right here, aren't we?
Yeah, we are. Public health scientists have long warned about the health hazards of ultra-processed foods, products that have been highly processed, often containing additives and many ingredients, things like soda, packaged snacks, and frozen meals. Now, a new global study suggests a diet high in these foods could shave years off your life. Analyzing data from 8 countries, including the United States, researchers uncovered several key findings. First, each 10% increase in ultra-processed food intake increases the risk of early death by 3%. And what they mean by early death is dying between the ages of 30 and 69. And then second, potentially 124,000 Americans die prematurely every 2 years due to ultra-processed food consumption. Why that matters, as people strive to eat healthier by reducing calories, fat, salt, sugar, they may be doing so in a way that is still linked to early death by simply switching to different ultra-processed foods. The new figure suggests that up to 2 out of every 100 people who die annually in the U.S. may have lived longer if their diet had contained fewer ultra-processed foods. And then ultra-processed foods increase the risk of dying from anything, not just a specific disease. So it seems to have an effect on everything. And then 4, people in the U.S. eat more than 50% of daily calories from ultra-processed foods. These foods make up 70% of products in an average grocery store. And then 5, where you shop and what you buy can make a difference. In the Nature Foods study, researchers wrote that Whole Foods offers a greater selection of minimally processed items and fewer ultra-processed options, whereas Target has a particularly high proportion of ultra-processed products.
I'm going to stop you right here on this one, because everything with this study, I love it. I think it's saying what we already know. But on this one, 5, I don't agree with, because I don't want people to think that if I shop at Whole Foods, it's a fix. Because I was actually in Whole Foods last week. And I was thinking about chips, because I listened to a podcast where the guy of, what's the chip manufacturer that, he's come out with these chips where they use non-seed oils to make them. It's not healthy chips. I don't want to say that, but it's healthier chips. And he was talking about, pick up the bags in your local grocery store. And Whole Foods, one thing they do a great thing about is they provide products that market themselves as healthier. But if you pick up the bag, I was in the chip aisle and I picked up the bags. It's just like reading the back of a bag of Doritos.
Yeah.
But on the front, it's things like organic, healthy, all these types of things. So don't let 5, don't let this steer you that if I shop at Whole Foods, because you're just going to pay more. You can go to Target and you can find really good things. You just have to pick up and read the labels.
Yep.
Period.
That's right.
So,
and there's actually some apps out there I did not know about until I read this article. Mm-hmm. There's an app called Processed.
Right.
And in that app, what you do is you scan that item and it tells you just how processed that particular item is. Mm-hmm. So if you're wondering what is considered ultra processed, you can use these apps to scan those things in the stores. And that's even that may help if you don't understand how to read those labels and what to look for and what not to look for. You can use this app and it'll at least guide you in the right general direction.
But the scary thing is the vast majority of the things in the center aisles in the grocery store nowadays are ultra processed. They're just not good.
Yep. Yep. My question here, though, on this is I question whether or not this is backward science. In other words, people who eat well, yes, they live longer, but people who eat well also do other things that are good for them.
We've had this conversation before.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, that's the only thing about this. And it says that 2 of 100 would live longer. I'm thinking, I thought it would be a lot higher than that.
Yeah.
I would think that the chances are, I don't know. It almost minimalized it and made it sound like, well, there's a small chance that, but I don't know.
Well, I mean, let's park on this for just a minute. I know we've got to move on, but to your point, most people, and because I'm in this camp right now, I've been pretty transparent since January. I have to get my cholesterol in check. And I can go take a statin and fix it overnight. But I don't want to do that. I just, something in my bones just doesn't want to be reliant on a medication. And also, what a statin does is it allows me to not change my habits. Mm-hmm. I know that firing that smoker up 6 nights a week and smoking the things that are incredible to eat is not good for my health. But you hear people try to attribute, just like somebody that says whole foods, you'll be healthier because of whole foods. That's not true. They say eat grass-fed beef. That you'll be healthier because you eat grass-fed beef. That's not true. Becoming vegan, studies show that being vegan makes you healthier. None of those assumptions are true. It's because what is true is if I have the mentality, to your point just a few minutes ago, if I have the mentality, oh, I probably need to go to Whole Foods, I'm thinking about it.
Yeah.
If I make the statement, and I did just last week, a good friend of mine that I never knew, he actually sells commercially locally raised grass-fed beef. I can drive by and see the cows. I know they're grazing, but it's not the grass-fed beef. It is. That is a small thing, but it's because I'm thinking about it.
Yeah.
I'm consciously making healthier choices. Spider, vegan. It's not the... I don't believe it's the fact that he's vegan is the reason he's so healthy. It's because as a vegan, he has become a student of our nutrition world. And ultra-processed foods in and of themselves in the same way is not terribly bad for you. I feel like I have had great success thus far on this journey that I'm on, but I'll eat a bag of chips.
Yeah.
But to our point earlier, it's the cause and the effect. I'm linking, I'm learning, I'm educating myself that if I eat this, number one, I may not sleep good tonight. Number two, I'm probably going to feel like garbage on my next ruck. And number three, it's just bad for me. It's those simple things. I have not cut out anything. I have not chopped out of my diet or out of my life anything that I was doing pre this journey. I've just learned to do moderation. I still eat meat. I just don't eat a lot of meat.
Yeah.
I went and got a Blizzard from Dairy Queen the other night.
Yeah.
I just don't get 6 a month.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's the most important thing with your health, with your diet, with your fitness. It's kind of like the submitting yourself to a plan is that you're thinking about it.
Yeah.
That's why vegans in all these studies are shown to be healthier. That's true, but it's not because of the veganism, I don't think. It's because they actually are students of what they're putting in their bodies.
It's sort of like, you know how you've talked before about how you would take the youth at the church and you'd ask them for their screen time on their phones and how much they're using their phones.
And it dropped.
Yeah. All they have to do is look at it and they go, oh, that's not good. And they realize that. And then it just, in and of itself, they realize that I'm spending too much time on my phone. They stop. Same thing happens with our food. When we realize that what we're eating is not good for us and we're paying attention to what we're putting in our bodies, we have a tendency to make better choices. We don't cut out our screen time completely.
Right.
But we make better choices.
Well, it's like these CGMs that we were talking about before the podcast, the continuous glucose monitors mm-hmm. that people are wearing and it's on their phone. I've actually thought about getting one of these. Mm-hmm. That device does not make them healthier. In the same way, becoming a vegan does not make you... Oreos are vegan.
Yeah.
Period. What that device does is it's allowing people to understand the cause and effect.
Yep.
If I eat that chocolate bar, my glucose is shooting through the roof. My blood sugar is shooting through the roof. My... oh my gosh. What do we produce when... Blood sugar goes insulin.
Insulin.
My insulin kicks in. My body starts producing insulin. Anytime your body's producing insulin, your fat burning mechanisms turn off.
Yep.
So if I want to keep my fat burning mechanisms turned on, I don't need to allow my blood sugar to spike, which means I don't need to eat that chocolate bar. We're as a society, we're learning this yin and yang, this yo-yo effect by simple little tools. Like we're learning that if I drink that cup of coffee at midnight, my sleep score is going to be 32.
Yeah.
And if you're one of those people that say you can drink coffee at midnight and have a good night's sleep, you're either wrong or you're psycho. Yeah. But I say all this to say, education is our friend. Yep. Education is what is going to help you get to the goal. Nothing is a silver bullet.
Yep.
It's not.
That's true.
Become vegan.
But that's what we look for. We look for the silver bullet.
Oh, if I shop at Whole Foods. No. Mm-mm. It's none of that stuff.
Those are good choices, but they won't.
Education will drive you to make better choices.
Yes.
But what so many of us do, what you did for years, what I did for years, is I'm good enough.
Yep.
And then you go to the doctor and they're saying you're going to have to go on a statin. Wake up call.
Yeah.
I need to get, because I never looked at myself as unhealthy. I mean, for Pete's sake, I was a marathon runner and I was the run for God guy. And, you know, I work out all during the week, but my health was deteriorating from the inside out.
Yeah.
And I had to do something about that.
Yeah. Yeah. Pay attention. It's worth investing in getting some of these monitoring things, I believe. Mm-hmm. My watch has made me pay more attention to a lot of the choices that I make, and it's good.
A balance.
I also bought, I don't know if I told you this, I have a smart scale. Have you seen the smart scales?
I've got one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so you know your body fat percentage, and it tells you all these different measurements. It measures these things, and I'm a lot more informed about my body now. And those things can only help. They can't hurt.
Yeah.
Right?
Now, I mean, there's a balance. I mean, like, you know, one of the popular things now is these people are getting whole body MRIs. And I don't know that I would want that because, I mean, the thing about doing a whole body MRI, it's going to find something.
Yeah, that's true.
And the chances are that something long term is going to be nothing. But it's going to find something that could turn into cancer 25 years down the road. Well, yeah. Then you got to ask yourself, how am I going to deal with that much information?
Yeah.
It's kind of like the idea of, do you want to know the day you die or don't you want to know the day you die? You fall into one of those camps, and depending on how you process information like that, you can go too far.
Yeah, it's true. Well, it's a time for Dean's Thoughts. That's a time when I share something I've written about the intersection between running and faith. You ever watch Jeopardy? I love trivia, even if I'm not that good at it. I want to talk about a guy who's really good at it. This is called The Running Gamble. I love trivia shows, probably a little too much. I even remember skipping class in college to watch Jeopardy. I still enjoy watching Jeopardy today, and although I'm not a jealous person in general, if there was something I envy, it is those contestants who seem to know nearly everything. One of those players is a guy named James Holzhauer. He is from Las Vegas and is a professional sports gambler. I'm not suggesting that I would like to gamble for a living, but I admire how he plays the game. He plays more aggressively than anyone who has ever played, which has led to him holding the top 10 winning totals in the history of the game. He is famous for going all in when he has the chance to gamble. His apparent logic is that he knows there is a substantial chance he knows the answer to the question, so the odds are on his side. Of course, it has led to some devastating losses of money too, but most of the time, he has been successful. He's a real-life legend. On our fitness journey, we're going to have those days when we don't want to go out for a run, a walk, or to the gym. We find ourselves debating in our mind whether it's worth it. Similarly, when we're faced with the pain of a workout or race, we are constantly weighing whether it is worth it to keep pushing. Those are reasonable and logical debates in our mind. But what if we looked at it like James looks at playing Jeopardy? We know that most of the time, getting out the door or pushing ourselves a little harder is not going to end in devastating consequences, but we are constantly what-if-ing ourselves. What if I get out there and I feel as bad as I think I will? What if I push a little harder and I crash? I get it. Those are reasonable questions to ask, but think about how James Holzhauer would answer those questions. He would say, but what if everything goes well? It's just a matter of reframing the questions. And as James has shown, playing the odds can pay off in a big way. Now, before you start shouting at me that we need to be careful, I'm not saying that we should be reckless on our fitness journey. There are times when even James doesn't go all in when it doesn't make sense to do it. But his default is to go all in. Instead of asking, should I go all in? Start asking, is there any reason I should not go all in? It could revolutionize your fitness. Luke 9:52 says, Jesus replied, suppose someone starts to plow and then looks back. That person is not fit for the service in God's kingdom. When we make the decision to follow Jesus, he's telling us that the only way to do it is to go all in. It's as simple as that. And the best part of going all in for Jesus is that we're not gambling at all. We know the outcome when we live a life for Christ. Matthew 19:29 says, suppose anyone has left houses, brothers or sisters, father or mother, husband or wife, children or fields because of me. Anyone who has done that will receive 100 times as much. They will also receive eternal life. The biggest payoff we can achieve is when we go all in for Jesus. Let's start asking the questions differently. Instead of asking, can I do it? Let's start asking, why can't I do it? We will have an occasional crash along the way, sure, but James Holzhauer doesn't have the top 10 best games in Jeopardy history for nothing. Taking a chance could lead to a big payoff. Why not place that bet? And recognize that going all in for Jesus is not gambling. It is a sure thing.
That's a great story, Dean.
Well, I just want to make sure everybody understands. This is not an endorsement for gambling. No. I'm not saying that at all. But this is, it's fascinating to watch this guy play. You know, he does this when he, if you're watching this, whenever they ask him, you know, he hits a daily double mm-hmm. and it says, you know, how much do you want to wager? And he does this with his hands. That means all in. Yeah. He pushes like he's pushing chips to the center of the table.
I've never heard of that guy. I've never heard of him.
He's a lot of fun to watch.
And the only one I know from Jeopardy is
Ken Jennings.
Yeah. That's the only one I know.
Yeah.
That's the only name I know.
Well, he has the top 10 games in history. I mean, that's amazing that anybody could do that. But it's because he almost always bets it all, no matter what the circumstances are. And every once in a while, you know, it's like toward the end of the game and he clearly, you know, maybe he's playing in a tournament and the idea is to make sure that he wins. There's times he doesn't. But for the most part, he goes all in. But he's a smart dude, too. You know, I like to try new things. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's an all-in approach. Whenever something new comes out, I just think it's a good idea to try these things. And there is a time to be cautious, but there's also a time to push through things, to learn new things, to try to figure out what you can and can't do. I tweaked my back earlier this week. And I could have said, most people would say, you probably ought to take a day or two off. I'm not taking a day off.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do it. Now, will it take my back a little bit longer to heal? Yeah, maybe a day or two. It might not, actually. I'm convinced that sometimes it's better to just your body works better when you keep doing the things you've been doing. But I did a track workout yesterday.
Yeah.
It was hard. It was a lot harder than normal, but it was worth it.
Yeah.
And I improved my fitness level yesterday because I was willing to go all in.
Yeah. And I think you and I are wired a lot the same way in that aspect of when I do something, I don't want to just partly do it.
Yeah.
I think back to when I was going to be out of town for a father-son bow tournament and I asked you to go with Landon to the father-son bow tournament. And for like 3 weeks, you were a student of archery. You wanted to win that thing.
Yeah.
You didn't just want to show up. And I remember, and sometimes it's things we do, we go all in and then we realize, okay, that's not for me. I think about somebody asked me to go fly fishing one time. I mean, the whole month before I bought the Orvis rod, the Orvis waders, I had all the gear and I was a student of fly fishing. And I went and I didn't like it, so I sold everything.
Yeah.
But we don't do things. We don't just kind of dip our toe in. We do a cannonball into whatever it is.
That's right.
And sometimes that's good. Sometimes that gets us in trouble.
Yeah.
But
most of the time, those things, when it does get us in trouble, it's not that big of a deal.
Right.
If I had, let's say that I did that workout yesterday and things went south, everything cramped up, and I wound up going home hunched over.
Sure.
Is that the end of the world? No, it's not. I mean, would it have cost me some time as far as recovery? Sure. So what?
Yeah.
So what?
Yeah. Yeah, it's true.
It's worth it. It's just worth it, because most of the time, you're not hurting yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're in that race and you're that voice in your head is saying slow down, and you're saying I want to push a little harder. What does it hurt to push a little harder?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you crash and burn.
Mm-hmm.
So what?
You never know how far you can go.
Till you go too far. That's right.
That's a good lesson.
Yeah.
Good story, Dean.
I remember a guy who had a habit. When he was in high school, he had this habit of going out too fast.
Mm-hmm.
And he would be leading at the beginning of every cross-country race. The first mile, he was always in the lead. And he would go, he'd finish further back in the pack. That same guy. And everybody thought, well, he's crazy. Why is he doing that? And he's hurting himself. Well, eventually the guy won a state championship because, you know, he was just willing to lay it out there and go for it. And, you know, a lot of times the biggest payoffs, nobody's talking about, you know, if I wound up having to take a few extra days to recover because I pushed it a little bit too hard, nobody's even going to think about it. A year from now, nobody's going to think about it. But if I did that and then something good, I'm running a race this weekend. Let's say I run a really good and fast time this weekend. Then I'll remember that.
Mm-hmm.
I won't remember the time I had to. It's the bigger payoff is worth the effort.
I don't know why when you were saying all that, it made me think about, I'll never forget when Lane was, he was probably 9 or 10. He was really coming into his legs on the bike. And it's back when we used to do milkshake. Well, he would do the milkshake ride with me, and we would go with the A group. And because that's all I could handle. I mean, the A group, in case you're wondering, there's an A-plus group.
Yeah.
The A group was my speed. And I'll never forget Lane. I think he was 10 or 11. He said, Dad, I want to go with the A-plus group. And I said, have at it. I'm not going. I can't keep up. I don't want to keep up with that group because they're crazy.
Yeah.
And, I mean, these are all grown men, professional careers.
I've tried to ride with that
$20,000 bikes. And Lane's like, I want to go with them. I'm like, go for it. You know these roads as good as anybody. You can find your way back, which he kind of took exception with, like, oh, so you think I'm going to get dropped? And I'm like, I know you're going to get dropped. So anyway, I'll never forget that first night. I see the A group rolling back. I mean, the A-plus group rolling in. I'm already there at the truck. They're all rolling in. No Lane.
Yeah.
I mean, I was like, I mean, I'm almost smiling because I'm like,
yeah,
he's getting a dose of it. 10 minutes later, he comes rolling in. He gets in the truck. He's so mad.
Yeah.
And he said, Dad, it's like they were trying to drop me. I said, they were trying to drop you. You're 10.
Yeah.
They don't want you in that group. And I'll never forget, this went on for like 3 weeks. He just, talk about tenacity. That's one thing Lane has.
Yeah.
He went back and back. And for like 3 weeks, every time he was coming in 15 minutes behind the pack. And I'll never forget week 4 or 5, he'd come rolling in with the grip. And I saw them all coming up beside him and fist bumping him. And it was that thing. And before long, he was the guy rolling in 5 minutes in front of that whole group.
Yeah.
He was whipping every one of them within a few years.
Yep.
But he went all in.
Yeah.
He took the chance. He wanted to find out where his limit was. And when I'm thinking back to this, the run of the week, Curtis.
Yeah.
There is no way he did what he did going at 40 and 43 years old, going from a 23-minute 5K to a 17-minute 5K. There's no way he did that without going all in.
That's right.
And there's so much we can learn from that. So just, I mean, just great reminder, Dean, with this story this week.
And again, instead of asking, can I do it? Ask yourself, why? Lane didn't ask himself, can I stay with that group? Lane was asking himself, why can't I stay with that group?
Yeah.
You know?
Age is just a number, right?
That's right. That's right. And sometimes you just got to go for it.
Yeah.
At Upward Sports, we're all about helping you on your fitness journey, but we also want to support you on your faith journey as well. You can sign up today for the self-paced Bible in a Year Challenge and listen every day as I read through the entire Bible in 365 episodes. As a bonus, I also give you helpful tips of the day and finish with an encouraging quote in each episode. You must be an Upward Running member to participate in this exciting and edifying challenge. Sign up and start listening today.
Every week I share a reason why running and or walking is so awesome. And we were just talking about some of this stuff. So gadgets. If you're a gadget type of person, running is pretty cool. Mm-hmm. The watches, the different things you can wear. The super shoes are basically gadgets these days. Headphones, apps that you can use while you're running. All the recovery stuff that we have now, the rollers, massagers, and things like that. All the things we can use. You were just talking about buying some dumbbells, mm-hmm. You know, all the things that we can use to try to increase our strength, flexibility, and other things. There's a lot of gadgets associated with running that you don't have to have any of them, but having those, if you like gadgets, there's a lot out there.
You just got to keep them in their place, just like the food we talked about.
That's right.
The $500 watch will not make you a faster runner. The $500 watch can help that process be more enjoyable.
Yep.
It can provide you data that will help you be more faster. But the only thing that is going to make you faster, stronger, or fitter is what you actually do.
Get out there and do it.
Yep.
Yep. Well, here's a cool story. Nick Simmons, you know Nick Simmons, right? Mm-hmm. Olympic 800 meter runner. Also a viral YouTuber. He posts a lot of stuff. He does some crazy stuff. Like he'll just go up to somebody on the street and race them.
Race?
He's an interesting guy. Anyway, he did something nobody has ever done before. So Nick Simmons, back in his day, ran a sub-4-minute mile. And this past week, he summited Mount Everest. He is the first person to do both of those things, run a sub-4-minute mile and reach the summit of Mount Everest, which I think is pretty cool.
I may be getting my stories conflicted. Was he one of the ones testing that new gas to where, you know, it usually takes, four or five weeks to summit Mount Everest because you got to go to the different
altitudes. I don't think he did anything different or special.
Well, there's a group out there right now that are summiting Everest in like a third of the time. And it's because of they're loading up on this gas, you know, at home in the weeks leading up to it, and it allows them to summit faster.
Like getting pre-acclimated?
Yeah.
Huh.
They're testing. And I didn't know if he was one of those or not, being that he just did it. Because they're able to do it faster, so it makes me think.
That makes sense.
All about
that
fast.
Yeah, it sounds something extreme like he would do. He loves extreme stuff. So.
But I think the verdict's still out on, you know, because it caused a lot of problems. It's kind of like diving too deep when you don't equalize. Going up high if you don't equalize and acclimate can be just as deadly in a lot of cases.
Yeah. Well, I never really paid that much attention to this, but the sub-4-minute mile and summiting Mount Everest are kind of linked because those two things happened at pretty close to the same time. The Edmund Hillary crested Mount Everest in 1953, and then the sub-4-minute mile happened in May of 1954.
Really?
Yeah. So they were very close. Nick Simmons is the first guy to do both. And if you wonder about, you know, I think there's some people look at climbing Mount Everest and they think, well, how hard is that? I mean, there's a bunch of people that do it. And so how hard is it? And people are still dying every year doing that, which, you know, part of me likes that. And let me explain myself.
That sounds weird.
I know. But let me explain myself. So much of what we do these days, we don't take chances.
Right.
And this is an extreme thing to do. And people are still willing to put their life on the line. I mean, the percentage of people who die trying this, for something that you don't have to do, it's pretty high. Mm-hmm. And yet people still do it. And I just admire people who are willing to do that.
Yeah, I think a lot of the people that die, it comes to some degree that they're not respecting the task.
And that's true. That is true.
It's kind of like, you know, back in my bull riding days, they said, if you ever get to the point where you don't fear getting on the back of the bull, you need to get out of the sport.
Yeah.
Because that's when you'll get hurt. And I think that's what happens a lot of times is they think, oh, it's no big deal. What? Yeah. Every step up there is a big deal.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's true. Well, one last story here from The Guardian. This British athlete smashes record for running the width of Australia. He says, like a revolving nightmare that wouldn't end. William Googe is the guy's name. Started running marathons in honor of his mother who died from cancer and to raise money for cancer. And he ran the width of finished in Sydney at Bondi Beach. 3,800 kilometers. So, you know, I never really paid attention to how big Australia is huge. Mm-hmm. It's 3,800 kilometers from one side to the other. The United States is about 5,000 kilometers. So You think about how big the United States is, and Australia is not that much smaller. Mm-hmm. That's a lot. Anyway, he got through this, started running in Perth on April 15th, covered 100 kilometers every day, which is, of course, the equivalent of 2.5 marathons. And he shattered the record that was held by Australian Chris Turnbull, who ran it in 39 days. He had run it, I guess, in 40. No, yeah, he had run it in 39 days. This guy, William, ran it in 35 days. So that's a big improvement in something. So anyway, this is a pretty cool, another cool accomplishment mm-hmm. that has happened. He said, the first 9 days were extremely challenging, but you have to tell your body and mind that even though you're struggling, you're going to persevere and you're going to get through it. What just goes right along with everything we're talking about here, doesn't it? So it says, Mr. Googe explained how the challenging run took a toll on his body, saying his toenails started falling off along the way, his feet started rotting, and the pain in his bones disrupted his sleep, causing him to hallucinate. Pretty tough thing.
Pretty hardcore.
All right. How about our trivia question for this week? Right along with the Nick Simmons thing. Which one is harder to do? Run a sub 4 minute mile or scale Mount Everest? And we'll use as the basis for that how many people have done each one of those things. So have more people run a sub 4 minute mile or have more people got to the top of Mount Everest?
I think I know the answer to that, but I have a feeling it may be a trick question.
If you know the answer to that, you can send it to dean@upward.org. And if you're the first person to send that in and you are a Run Club member, you will win $20 off in the store. Our motivational thought of the week, this was listed under a bunch of trail running quotes, although it doesn't really talk about running, but it is tangentially applies. Albert Einstein said, look deep into nature and then you will understand everything better.
So true.
Goes back to what we were talking about a little while ago. The closer to nature you get, the more you see God in what you see.
Get outside
and get to it and join the Upward Run Club.
Absolutely.
If you're listening to this, you should be part of the...
Got a lot of cool things going on in there.
That's right. So, and if you haven't already, make sure you subscribe to this podcast. Make sure that you watch it on YouTube. If you usually listen to it, then maybe you'd enjoy watching it. I don't know why anybody would like watching us, but there are some that do.
I ask myself that every day, Dean.
And until next week, may God bless every step of every run and or walk. Go out there and shine your light.
Good job, Dean.
For more information about Upward Running, visit upwardrunning.com. If you have questions about your salvation, click on the Peace with God tab. There is nothing more important. Thanks for joining us today.